and tell me you're not really hungry. Yeah. Because that cortisol will mask all of those hunger signals. It will stop those signals from going to the brain to tell you, hey, I need some nutrients now, by the way, because we've gone a couple of hours and I'm kind of out of sauce.
Okay, so I have the lovely Dee Zabara from Cell to Soul here to talk to us. And her whole thing is about biohacking your life, which totally intrigued me. Hey Dee, how are you?
Hi, I'm very well, Kirsty. I'm very excited to be here.
Oh, me too. When I connected to a few of your videos and had a look at your Instagram, I'm like, this girl is my vibe.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So tell us a little bit about Cell to Soul.
Yeah, so Cell to Soul is a business that I created a long time ago. I actually heard the phrase from Dr. Sarah Gottfried, a person who I think is the bee's knees when it comes to functional medicine, who was kind of a doctor turned functional doctor. And when she said something along the lines of, you know, I want people to feel healthy from their cells to their soul, I was like, this was like, I don't know, maybe 8 years ago. Yeah. I thought, that's it. And I wrote that down and I put it on my vision board. And now I have a business. I mean, look, it's easy because you can just register a business name, right? You know, it's not that hard. Just hope that nobody else has it. But
I feel like
it resonated. It was like a gong in my soul. You know, I said, yes, that is what, you know, that's what I'm going to be all about. And even though I felt maybe that's not very self-explanatory, to me, it makes perfect sense knowing what I know and sort of the way I practice is very much, I like to look at both ends of the spectrum, you know, take all the science, take all the literature, take all the research, and then knit that somehow into people's energy, you know, and their spirituality or their faith, and, you know, kind of look at it from both angles. So, and yeah, and sort of like interweave it however I felt it suited the person that I was talking to. Because I have people coming from really different ends of those spectrums. And I'm really interested in both sides. And so I guess that's, to me, that's holistic health. Like, yes, holistic health is your mind and body and soul. But for me, it's also the levels of science and spirituality as well. Because, you know, our energy. Yeah, and that's, you know, the whole cell. That's like a quantum physics, you know, kind of rule where they know that when you look at us real close up, we are like 99% space and like only, you know, 1%, or I think it's less than 1% matter, which is kind of crazy because we just look and we think, oh, you know, this is my physical body, or, you know, I can't possibly be energy, or that person's energy can't possibly, like, you know, kind of assimilate with my energy, which is completely false because that is the reality when you look at quantum physics, which is like the most scientific thing you could possibly do. So yeah, it's pretty surreal.
Yeah, I'm all with you about this, you know, looking beyond the body and at that cellular level and being holistic with everything that we do, like not just treating one thing, because it's not going to work, because we've got all these, just, you know, if we knew what was within us, it's just amazing. Yeah. It's divine.
Yeah. And you know what else? On the cell side of things, I was listening to Dr. Mark Hyman, and he sort of said, guess how many cellular processes go on every second. So I'm actually going to let you guess, Kirsty, many cellular processes our body creates or does every single second.
It'd have to be millions.
It is 32 billion billion.
No way.
And every single process needs a vitamin or a nutrient to make it work. Yeah. So when I heard that, I was like, I knew the body was amazing, but I did not know it was that amazing. And
there's so much going on beneath the surface. And I am intrigued by the whole philosophy of biohacking and, you know, really being mindful of your outer environment, but the inner environment, you know, like what is going on in here that we can, you know, improve our longevity and our health and our mental well-being and our physical well-being. And it just, once you go, it's like a rabbit hole. You just go, you're stuck down there.
I am forever in that rabbit hole. I tell you.
You pop one thing and go, where's this been my whole life? Oh my gosh.
And then you're like, tangent, 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 tangent. You're like, what am I reading?
I know. I think I drive my family mad with all the changes that I'm implementing.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. You know, like, wait, what are we doing this week? Yeah.
They know that they always feel better if they listen to me. So they've all just learned.
Of course they do. Of course they do. I love that. So funny. My family's the same.
So what with your clients, what type of things are you mainly sort of offering, I suppose? Like if someone comes to see you, like.
So there's many different prongs to my business now. I have a clinic in the CBD at the moment, and I also have a few projects. So being the person that I am, I take on a lot. And I don't like too much of the same thing. I just like to keep my life interesting. And, I, you know, doesn't everyone?
Yeah.
So I've got the one-on-ones that I'm situated in a fitness health club, so in a gym, in a premier in the city in Sydney CBD. And so I tend to get a lot of people who are their exercises. So they're not athletes, they're exercises. Some people exercise, you know, six or five times a week. And I'm very interested in their sort of physical appearance. So I get those kind of people in my clinic. And then I get people who are experiencing really bad skin issues, hormonal issues, gut issues. I have a lot of clients at the moment, I don't know why, just kind of they come in batches almost. It's kind of funny. But I have a lot of clients at the moment going through IVF or who are wanting to fall pregnant. So we're working on their overall health, but the ultimate end goal is to help them fall pregnant.
Yeah.
So I kind of have really interesting, kind of diverse range of clients. It's funny because a lot of the time I think they sort of come to me with, you know, I want to lose fat or I want to gain weight. But what I can't help myself but uncover what is behind all of that.
Yep.
To figure out, okay, why. And a lot of the time, you know, a lot of the time it's lose fat and we do that. But, you know, I really have to explain to my clients, well, you have to be healthy first to then lose fat. And alongside that, the reason that they usually want to lose fat is because they know it's like better for them. And really they just want to feel and look great. That's what they want. And essentially even more basic than that, they just want to feel good in their own body. And so that's where the whole, that's how I see, you know, the cell to soul side coming in. Well, you can't just do the physical work and then expect that you're going to find this perfect point where you look at yourself in the mirror and go, I really love my body. I'm happy where I am. You know, you've got to do that emotional work as well.
Yeah.
To change your mindset in the first place, because otherwise if you take the same mindset to a smaller body, you're just going to want a smaller body and a smaller body, or a more toned body and then this body or that body. So it's about changing the mindset as you go to make sure that you don't get stuck in that kind of vicious cycle.
Yeah.
So I have that's my clinic. Yeah. And then I have some projects. So at the moment I'm working with a YouTuber. I'm sure I can say it. I can say, I just, you know, I can't reveal any of the actual things that we're working on, but I am kind of the nutritionist approved person behind Sarah's Day, her new cooking project coming out. So she's like an Aussie YouTuber, and people love her. I love her.
She's a great girl.
She's a girl from the Shire, and she's just so lovable. And you know, she just really wants to help people, but she realizes that she doesn't have the necessary qualifications, even though she is very experienced.
Yeah.
But she doesn't have the qualifications, and so she just, you know, she pulls in the people with the qualifications. So that's me
for the cool
project that's coming up, which is really exciting. So I've got that. And then the other kind of like projects, because like I love projects. I love working one-on-one with people, but I also really love projects.
Yeah.
So I've got that project at the moment. Then I've also got another project which is starting to, it's kind of funny because I sort of told two clients kind of roughly about it, and they've gone off and told their gyms, and now their gyms have reached out to me, and then other people have, you know, been like, oh, can you do this for my sister's gym, my brother's gym, like, and it's just, the word is just getting out, which is great. But I, you know, I have to stay loyal to the first gym that I'm doing it with, which, because we haven't even really like perfected it yet. But I'm doing the nutrition behind the challenge, but it's a overhaul of what you would normally see from, you know, like the meal plans of the, you know, the 8-week challenges that you see in gyms at the moment. So it's coming from a very different place. Obviously focusing on nutrient density, but it's more than that. And it's an integration with personal training as well, and what kinds of exercise help our bodies reach a certain level of health, depending on what our biomarkers are. So, you know, I kind of basically assess each person going through the challenge, and then I kind of put them into what their body needs. So I put them into a specific program, like everyone's doing this, you know, going and doing the same classes, but how they're working out in those classes is different too. And so I'm sort of, I'm trying to mix it up. Like I've always wanted to be a trendsetter. And so, and I think people want that.
Very individualized, because that's
individual
nutrition. Like it's, somebody can take something like a meal plan and it might not work for their bodies. Or it might depend on the amount of exercise that they're doing compared to somebody else. So there's definitely no one size fits all with nutrition, is there?
Agreed. 100%. There is nothing I agree more on.
Yeah. So what is your like driving belief behind your nutrition practice? Like what is the one thing that you try to really guide?
It's a matter of wanting people to reach their full potential. That's it. That is the absolute crux of it. And biohacking allows us to do that with the smallest amount of time invested with the biggest outcome. And that's, you know, that's really as simply as I explained what biohacking is. And people say, what is it? What is it? You know, they hear that word kind of thrown around. And to me, it's what's the smallest change you can make for the biggest return on investment, you know? And that's kind of how I see it. And it's about, you know, I want to improve people's quality of life, you know. I'm sure everybody has a family member or knows a friend who they always have something going on with their health and it stops them from living their best life.
Yeah.
And it's so sad.
It is fuel. I mean, it's so important that we be really mindful about what we put into our bodies and and also look at, you know, what we're doing. What is our career or what is our, you know, day-to-day activity like as well, and fuel for what we need, you know, because that's the thing. Sometimes I think people fuel their bodies and it's out of sync with what they're doing and the amount of activities they're doing as well, which can make them feel frustrated because they feel like I'm doing all the right things, but then they've got to look at the other side of it. Okay, well, how are you moving your body?
That's it. And also then again, to layer on top of that, what's your mindset about what you're doing? What's your mindset about how you're eating? You know, it's one thing to get the right information and it's another thing to have a strong why or a good why, you know, because if your why is I just want to look good so other people think I look good, so I get picked up in a club or people notice me or whatever, like that's not a good enough why. And once you get there, you won't feel fulfilled anyway. And along the way, you probably won't feel fulfilled too, you know, because that might vary the types of food that you're picking, you know. And while I believe very much that calories, of course, make a difference to your overall body weight, there's a lot more that goes into that equation than people think. You know, the food that you put in your mouth does not equal the energy that it creates in your body, because there's 32 billion processes going on. So there is a lot of variation as to, you know, why one person eats a certain amount of calories, the other person can eat the exact amount of calories, and they look like totally different body shapes. So of course that's going to happen because of that variation. Yeah. You know, but at the end of the day, if you've got a good why, if your why is truly, I guess, you know, pure, then it will create for you not only the body you want, the mindset you want, and you will become the person or the type of person you would like to be around. And I really do think that, you know, the more I kind of do podcasts or even talk to people, even online and things like that, and I find the more people that are attracted to me and the kind of followers I get now is people who are really like hashtag woke, you know, like they are people who they really like, they care about this stuff, you know, and they are doing the self work, or they at least want to and recognize that it's important.
I think that's a big important point that you just made then, because if you're going to a nutritionist, you've got to be prepared to do the work as well. It can't be just like, I'm just going to go here and they're going to solve everything for me, because that's not how it is. So I think it's a lot different when you actually have a client coming to you that is prepared to also look at this holistically and see that it is mindset as well as physical body and what's going on inside and all the cells and the brain and, you know, things like that. And then that's when you go, okay, wow, this is much bigger than just a meal plan.
Yes. And I think that the reason, I guess, it's kind of funny because if I think that the real reason why I probably moved into nutrition was because it is the biggest influencing factor on our mental health, our mindset, our motivation to want to go to the gym, our, you know, our decision-making when we go to the shop. So is it out of desperation or is it a thought where you think, okay, you know, I want to feel good in my body. I want to exude confidence and happiness and, you know, be a great person. Okay, I'm going to choose foods that make me feel great and make me feel alive. And, you know, I want to experience life as, you know, as amazing as it can be. Like it's two very different, you know, decision-making rationales. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I am a full-on believer that, you know, we are what we eat or we are what we absorb rather. And food has so much influence on who we become, but it's a tool. It's a strong, very influential tool because we do it at least 3 times a day. I mean, what else do we do 3 times a day? Like, you know, maybe 6, depending on, you know, if you snack and that sort of thing. But like, that's a very frequent thing that we're doing, an activity that we're doing that we have a lot of power to change, to, you know, to upgrade ourselves or downgrade ourselves with every bite.
Oh, absolutely. And you think it's not just the meals, it's the shopping for the food, it's the preparing of the food. So if you don't have a good relationship with food, that has a real ripple effect on a lot of areas of your mindset, that your, you know, like you were saying, motivation. It is quite, I think people just don't understand sometimes how much nutrition is actually, if they're not paying attention to it, not being mindful with it, how much that can negatively impact their mindset.
Absolutely. And the thing that I love the most about food is that if you've got a healthy person and an unhealthy person, or I should say probably a person who eats junk food and crap and a person who eats well to fuel their body, you know, you've got these two different people fueling themselves in two different ways. But food, not only if you fed the same food to person B as you did to person A who's eating junk foods, not only does it make that person kind of brings them up to a good baseline, there are some foods, not just some foods, not just the what of the food, it's also the how and the combinations and the quantities and the frequency and all that sort of stuff too, that not only just bring you to a good baseline, but can excel you as well. So it's not that they just make you feel average, they can make you feel amazing as well. Yeah. And so it's kind of like, it's food science and it's food relationships in relationship to other foods as well. It's not just, you know, the superfood topic is a little bit confusing because people just think, well, if blueberries are a superfood or if acai is a superfood, if all I eat is acai, I'm going to feel awesome 24/7. But that's not the case. Yeah. And, you know, and that's just a marketing tool. You know, they're just trying to get you to buy their product. And that product might be a very nutrient-dense food. Fair enough. That is true. But it's about learning enough about food when you take a step back and you look at all different types of food, all different combinations of food, you know, from different areas of the world, or, you know, different colors, different textures, all that sort of stuff. Like that, your sort of weekly intake of food, that is how you should look at your, you know, quote unquote diet. Like it's that combination, that, you know, portioning, that amount, those types. That's what you're looking at, not just like if I put acai and I sprinkle acai onto my cereal, it makes my cereal, you know, 100 times more beneficial for me and it cancels out the negativity of having highly refined cereal, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think people just kind of, maybe it's like spot reducing in the body. That's what you could liken it to, you know? They just think this one food, done, tick. I've had my spirulina for the day, tick. I'm healthy forever. You know, it's just, it's so much more dynamic and
we would like it to be that way, but
we would love it to be that way. But you know, it is much simpler than people think at the same time, because pulling ourselves out of the mindset that marketing has kind of maybe boxed us into. That's the kind of hard part. But then once you step out of that and you at least get some level of education around, you know, like what I was saying before about, you know, the different types and different flavors and different textures and different colors. Once you see that, you think, huh, there's like 70% of foods in the world that I don't even need to eat and I'll feel great. So, you know, it's hard to pull yourself out of the paradigm, out of the mindset at first. And then once you're out of it and you spend some time at least educating yourself on the basics, which like I do this in my course, I'm not trying to plug myself, but I do that in my course. You know, and it's a matter of eating just food as nature intended, real food. Like that is literally as hard as it needs to be. Yeah.
Whole foods. Ditch the packaging, ditch the boxes, care about where the meat's coming from or where the fish is sourced. Like just being a bit mindful about those areas. But really when you just strip back to just whole natural foods from the earth, it does take a lot of the stress out of it because we're not worried about, you know, half of the aisles in the supermarket then. We don't need them. You're like, no, don't need.
100%. And even you'll have known in the Ice Project when I talked about it on his podcast, we were saying, you know, you only really need to just go around the perimeter of the grocery store, which is like aisle one where the fresh produce is, maybe around the back, around the fridge, you know, maybe you get some dips or some, you know, coconut yogurt or whatever it might be, you know, and then make your way around the side of the frozen section because you can get some frozen fruits and vegetables, you know, which have been snap frozen. So when you defrost them, they're still going to be pretty fresh, you know, in comparison to something that's been, you know, sitting on a truck for 4 days and then gets to the supermarket and just sitting there rotting for, you know, two days as well, or again, you know, so there's all of that, you know, there's all of that variation and that's a whole nother can of worms, but you know, you really, really can be as simple and it doesn't have to feel as overwhelming as, oh my gosh, do I pick this soy sauce or that tamari sauce? Or is this gluten-free soy sauce? Is that the same as tamari sauce? Or should I get coconut aminos? Like it doesn't, you know, you don't need to go through all of that. You don't need to put yourself through all of that because if you're just eating, you know, if you're just eating real foods, then you don't really have those problems. And you're right. You take the stress out of it.
Yeah. And so what's your take on environmental toxins? Are you getting a lot of people coming to you with like inflammation in the body and issues that are coming up, do you think, from environmental toxins?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. It's funny that I even just did a functional test on myself, an organic acids test. I don't know if you've heard of those before.
No.
But the organic acid test it's a pretty awesome functional test. It's also a bit expensive, especially when you couple it with something called a mycotoxin test. And these are both done by Great Plains Laboratory in the US.
Okay.
And they have a look at like those and Dutch tests. So, I mean, these are just three examples of functional tests that you can do. They look for things like, you know, bisphenol A or BPA, like do we have high exposures to that? Or are we in a urine sample, are we peeing out particles of that? Therefore, if we are, then we know that our body is holding on to it, or at least we have a lot of exposure. And if we have a lot of exposure, then we know that our body, or potentially our liver and our detoxification system, has a high load on it because it's having to get rid of a lot of that, you know. And so that's that BPA, just if people want to know, is in relation to sort of touching plastics. Or there's, you know, there's tests, and the test that I was kind of alluding to before was I just did a mycotoxin test, and I have forever had issues with my skin. You know, it's almost like I have to be perfect, you know, for lack of a better word, in order for my skin to stay good. Yeah. And if I, you know, even if I had like a day where I sort of ate junk, then it would just show up in my skin straight away. Now, there's a layer of that that's involved with, you know, kind of the leaky gut situation. But I had that test done. I had treated myself as I would any patient who always comes back with amazing results. You know, I've had a lot of experience healing people from their food sensitivities and getting fantastic results and having people reintroduce food and not really having any problem with that. And so I went through that whole process and I still had the same thing with my skin. And I knew it was a liver thing. I knew it was a liver thing. And I just couldn't figure out what was going on that was the reason for it. So I started treating myself as a, you know, as a, like a high priority detox. So I was doing a lot of like sort of gentle whole food and some supplemental liver detoxification, or just yep. liver support rather. It wasn't really a detox. It was a liver support. And then I started to notice my skin just being a lot more kind of resilient, I guess is a good way to say it, a bit more resilient. And I thought, okay, so there's something going on in my liver. It's definitely my liver. And I suspected it before, but until I kind of put all my eggs in the one basket and then really sort of targeted my liver, I couldn't really see the results as much. So I thought, okay, it's my liver. And then I did this test, and I am peeing out something called ZEA, which I can't say the full name of it, but basically because it comes from, it's a mold, and it comes from either food sources or like mold.
Mm.
There's all of the foods that they said, oh, you know, do you have high levels of this or high levels of that or high levels of this? And I was like, no, I don't eat high levels of any of those things. They're all maybe occasional foods or maybe once a week foods, yeah. just depending on what food it was. But I know that I had been exposed to mold. The funny thing was, is that the mold exposure that I know of, to be fair, it's the one I know of. I mean, there could be ones around that I don't know of. But I live in a new house. Like it's new. There's no, yeah. I can't see any mold, and we've only lived there for about a year. And it was a gym I used to work at, and it was basically covered in mold. There was no ventilation in there whatsoever. And I really harped on about it. I was like, this, yeah. you know, we've got to change this. It's not good for people. Anyway, so I hadn't been there for, hold on, March. So 4 months, I hadn't been there for 4 months, and I was still peeing out this mold.
Wow.
So, I mean, look, like me, someone who it's not that it's my job to look after myself. Like, obviously it's good for me to look after myself. I consider myself a role model to other people. If I can live a life that makes me my best self, without being ridiculous and crazy, I can show people that they can do it too. Even mums can do it too, working mums. So you can be busy and you can have all of these things going on and you can still live a healthy life. Like, I believe if I can't do it, I can't expect my clients to do that. I can't ask that of them. That's not fair. So, you know, for me, somebody who looks after myself, I still had that going on for me, and I still had something that was underlying that was unaddressed. You know, so isn't it interesting that sometimes we manage ourselves so well that we kind of miss those underlying things. So I thought, wow, that's pretty crazy. That
it shows how important nutrition is in combating these things that sometimes we have no control over, which especially is our environment and, you know, EMFs and all that other, you know, the fact is we use wireless devices, we rely on them, you know, we're pretty we need them at this point. So then it's like, okay, well, what can I do to protect my mind and my body if I've got to be, you know, in contact with some things that aren't so great for me?
And totally.
I think it's important to be empowered where you can. What can I take control of? Because, and sometimes we're not even aware where mold is. I mean, I've read that it can be in certain coffees and coffee pods. And
yes. Yeah, it can.
So, I mean, and you don't also want to get to a point where you're like not touching anything.
Yes. And see, and that's the hard thing, because it's like you have to go down all the rabbit holes to figure out, okay, well, which one is the highest priority for me? And I guess that's what I do with my clients.
Yeah.
You know, because environmental toxins definitely are important. And I am not somebody to speak on something I haven't done the research on. I know that EMFs are not great for us. I haven't taken the time to really deep dive into that. Mm. I'm well aware that there are lots of, I'm always getting notifications that there are new lectures or new seminars available to practitioners where they're talking about it. So I know it's important.
Yeah.
I even literally said it about an hour ago to my mum, who sat my daughter right next to the Wi-Fi router. And I was like, you know, I was thinking to myself, God, I really need to find out, what can I put over that Wi-Fi router? Like, can I put a steel bin? I don't know. Like, my poor little beautiful girl, like, I don't want her exposed to that if it's that close, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes you become a little bit, you know, people might think you're over the top, but at the same time, when you're, and this is really relevant for clients, when you're putting in all this effort and you feel like it's taking up a lot of time and energy, if you're not getting the results because you've put your energy in the wrong place, it's so disheartening and you just give up. Mm. And that's just the saddest worst thing to happen, because people have, you know, they have the motivation and they have the desire to do better and be better and contribute more to society, but they're just kind of choosing the things that aren't as big a priority. So in many ways, I'm just kind of, I do like a bit of a life audit on people in terms of their health from a health perspective.
Yeah.
And I think, okay, you know, does your job mean that you touch a lot of copper pipes? You know, like, are you a plumber? Or, you know, do you live with people who, you know, are spray painters, or, you know, like spray paint cars or things like that? Or are you around that office all the time? Is there an office next door that is, you know, always consistently burning off fumes and you're constantly inhaling that? Like, that's when you do this kind of life audit on people and try and figure these things out, so you can say, okay, your body is saying this, and, you know, symptoms are your body's way of voicing what's going on or that there's something wrong. And so I say, okay, these are the symptoms. So this is where your body's at right now. This is your lifestyle. This is your food. This is your sleep. And this is your water intake. And this is your movement. Now, how do we kind of, what is the most important thing that we look at? Can we do one thing from here and one thing from there? Or do we need to do five things over here, you know, to make sure that we address the most important priorities for them, and so that they know that they're being supervised from an outsider's perspective, who knows that there are certain things that need to be addressed in a certain order.
Yeah.
For various reasons, you know, for a person who is exposed to, you know, I have a client who's got an autistic child who I'm helping him with his autistic child, and he's a spray painter, you know, and his son is always around the office, and his wife was around when she was pregnant. I'm well aware that that child's toxin bucket is way higher than his little body can handle. So, you know, a lot of our effort is on detoxifying his body, and just really starting with, because he also suffers constipation, just really starting with moving the bowels to just at least get some junk out. Because if we start detoxing from the top down and it gets down to that, you know, that last little section and it can't go anywhere, well, he's still as toxic as he was before, possibly even more toxic. So, you know, and that's again another thing. I can see that he needs detoxification, but I have to get his bowels moving first, you know, slowly start that process, then open up the rest of his pathways, and then start to detoxify him by really pulling things from his nerves and his tissues and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a process.
So what's your view on, like, detoxing? How do you think people should detox, and how often? Like, what's your sort of view on that?
Again, I think it depends on the priority. So there are, you know, certain symptoms that if you have things along the lines of, and look, this is hard because, again, this could be symptoms for so many things, but, you know, mental fatigue or skin rashes or like gut disturbances, hormonal issues. I mean, all of these things can be liver. However, if you have a particular client who's just gone through a period of binge drinking, which is actually quite common that I'm seeing right now in my clinic, because, you know, people say having to stay home because of coronavirus, you know, that, you know, then it changes the focus for them, because for them, if they've just gone through a lot of, you know, a period of drinking a lot of alcohol, well, then the priority is to start to detoxify. And I always start with detoxification in a gentle way, as gentle as possible.
Yeah.
So the phase three is where I start. So phase one and two is to do with the liver. Phase three is to do with the bowels.
Okay.
So if we don't excrete toxins, it's got to be that's got to be the first step, the first priority. So we've got to be excreting daily things before we start pulling things that have been in there for months and years, because that can get really dangerous.
Mm.
So we have to optimize all the systems in preparation for something like a liver detox, which you just kind of use herbs and specific supplements and things like that. You could use, like, I haven't done this yet, to be honest, but I have heard amazing things about it. And recently I had the complete opposite view about it, because I was like, I just don't know if that's natural, but like things like coffee enemas and stuff like that, like, it's not something I have used yet, so I wouldn't recommend that to anybody as the first thing that they would go and look at, because there's so much work that has to be done before that. But it is something that I will do a deep dive into soon. But doing things gently, like eating bitter foods, is so important for your liver. So important.
Okay.
So bitter foods, anything that tastes bitter on the tongue is going to help stimulate your bile production. A slow increase of fats in your diet is going to help bile production, because your body will say, oh, hold on a second, I'm eating lots of fats, therefore I'm going to need a lot of bile to emulsify those fats and break them down. And so your body will respond accordingly. And if it doesn't, that's a potential for maybe there are some pathogens living in your liver that are stopping your bile from kind of coming out and helping you break down fats. Because a lot of pathogens, nasties, parasites, and heavy metals, they like to live in your liver. So that's sometimes what, like, after you do tick off all the basics, if there's still something going on, if there's still underlying stuff left over, which is always what I say to my clients, whatever stuff is left over, then we address it, but we have to nail the basics first. And so when it comes to detox, again, you know, you want to make sure that you've got those basics covered, where your, you know, patient, client, friend, whatever, is eliminating things properly first. And I guess as parents, your children are eliminating things properly first.
Yeah.
So they're making sure they're pooping and going to the toilet, you know, for number ones as well. And just getting junk out. And if they're constipated, you do not want to do a detox. Like, do not do a detox on a constipated child. Like, you could give a child very safely fairly high doses of magnesium until it becomes almost like a laxative and it starts to clear out.
Yeah.
And that, alongside proper fibers and some variation in fibers to sort of just make sure that you're getting that, you're getting that stool nice and kind of bulky, and you're stimulating that motility to sort of go through and clean out the junk. So that's your first phase. And then you go to the bitters, and, you know, you could take liquid bitters if you want, making sure you're chewing really well, not exposing yourself to environmental toxins, and not drinking alcohol, because those are going to then load the liver.
I like that you brought up magnesium. I've been doing a lot of research on magnesium in the last sort of 6 months, and how much the body needs and how many different forms there are. And
so many.
I think that there's a lot of supplements out there that are not even the type of magnesium that our body really needs, and we're paying a lot of money for them.
that's true.
What's your take on magnesium for the body?
I think it is probably, in my opinion, and the research, obviously, my opinion is based off the research, is that it is one of the most safe minerals that you can supplement with. And the cool thing that I actually learned from ATP Science is that when you dose somebody with magnesium, you can tell when it's too much, because they're like, it's like a laxative.
Yes.
Because if it's a relaxant, then they're relaxing too much, if their intestinal organs are relaxing too much, then it will just kind of fall out of them. So you know that you've hit your tolerance. Now, for an adult, you know, a sort of average size, what's average size? Around about the 70 kilo mark is, you know, they could go up to levels of 900 milligrams of magnesium. So that's a lot higher, and that's equivalent magnesium. So that's a lot higher than we might, you know, see in supplements off the shelf, which could be, you know, that could be like 100 milligrams, even if it's a decent brand. So, you know, so there's kind, I believe in, again, I guess this is a very personalized way of approaching things, is I want to look at it as, you know, what does this person need? Because they might need a lot more magnesium than is suggested for them, and it being a safe mineral to use, and one that is quite depleted in our soil, so plants don't actually make these minerals. It's the soil that we get it from, and then it just kind of carries through the plants, and then we eat it. So, you know, it's basically like we're eating soil. It's not in the soil, we ain't getting it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think for that reason, magnesium and zinc, for that reason, that it's kind of depleted in the soil now, just based on agriculture and how we've been harvesting crops, and I guess the damage we've been doing to the soil over the years, which was maybe unanticipated. We weren't anticipating that. It is what it is. And so I think it's a safe mineral for that reason. I like to use, there's two forms that I like to use, and that's magnesium bisglycinate, which is magnesium attached to a glycine molecule. It's supposedly got 100% bioavailability. So the way in which it enters the body, you get 100% of the potential magnesium that's there. However, if you have digestive issues, you're going to get 100% of the potential as, you know, as as far as your body can digest it and as far as your body can absorb it. So there's that too, which sometimes I think is higher for people a lot of the time than is on the bottle, because for a perfectly healthy person, they need, you know, maybe the suggested amount is say 300 milligrams, but why would a perfectly healthy person be having magnesium in the first place? They don't need a supplement, you know, because their body is working great and fine. So it's kind of, you know, you got to sort of, I guess, read between the lines when it comes to that. The other form that I really love, and I'm not like a form Nazi. It's just, this is anecdotal evidence. When people tell me they feel great, or when I experiment with it and I feel a difference, that's what I use. So the one that I love is a pure magnesium citrate, because it's got magnesium and the citrate feeds into the Krebs cycle, and I actually feel like I have more energy, and then magnesium calms me down, and I can have, I'll have 400 milligrams of magnesium in a sachet from Diasporal, which is a practitioner only brand, but I love it so much. And I can instantly feel, after having just like a cup of water with that in it, I instantly feel more relaxed.
I agree. Yeah.
What forms do you use? You've been doing a deep dive on that. Yeah. You know.
and that's, I feel like when you do these things, it really connects you to your intuition as well, because when you put things into your body and you're really tuning in to how your body feels, you notice it. You notice it in your muscles. You notice it in your brain, in your mental clarity, in your functioning, in your energy. And I think if we let ourselves be guided by intuition a lot more, we would intuitively do things that are a lot better for us.
Absolutely.
Because you do, you really do feel, you know, a positive side effect when you're doing things that are enhancing your body from the cells out, from the cells of the soul.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
What a great motto. Yeah. No, I agree with that 100%, you know, and I think this is my approach very much as well, is I want to empower people. You know, I want to empower them to be able to, I want to arm them with the knowledge, and then I want to let them figure out what works best for their body. Like, yes, I know what tools to try, and that's where all my years of study has come from, but then what actually works for that person's body might not be the first thing I thought was going to work for them. And that is not, I'm not a bad practitioner. I don't have any concerns or qualms saying that. That is a matter of allowing the individual to figure out what works for them, you know, and that is just, it is just supremely important, I think. The thing I was going to say though was what you said, as like, I agree with that 100%. Sometimes people, I think, can misconstrue listening to their gut, however, or their instincts, as, you know, sometimes it can lead us astray, and I'll explain my point. So I talk a lot about appetite and hunger. And so when people are hungry, they eat food because they're like, I'm hungry, so I'm going to eat. If you have signals or chemicals in your body, or even pathways that are a little bit broken, they're not working efficiently, and you're listening to your body might not actually be trustworthy at that time because of the broken, you know, it's like the traffic lights are broken. So they're saying green, but really it should be saying red, you know. And so I think for that reason, when people think, okay, well, I'm hungry, so I better eat. But what if it's a matter of, you know, what if your serotonin is low and that is what is creating the desire to eat? What is that? What if that is creating an appetite for you or a craving, and you're just confusing that with needing to eat some food or wanting a sweet treat after every savory meal or dinner, you know, always wanting dessert after dinner? Like, that's a habit. That's a trained response. That's not hunger. And, you know, like I was saying, those like kind of signals in the body, you know, we've got these hormones that regulate our hunger and that regulate our satiety. And so if you do even slight tweaks of your macronutrients might help you feel more satiated and help those certain hormones to actually kind of trigger to the brain and really talk to the brain and say, hey, look, actually I'm full, and stop the desire to eat. But the desire to eat and the need to eat, so the appetite and the hunger, they're very different. So when we are on after we've already gone up the hill, so we've got all this healing to do. Once we're kind of cruising and we're at the top of the hill and we're cruising again and it's maintenance, that is where you want to be. And that is when you can trust your body because you know how to address things like stress and cravings and all that sort of stuff that masks true hunger or even true fullness, you know? So it's because again, you know, there's all of those layers. And so stress is one of those things that people think, you know, they're hungrier than they are because stress kind of changes those systems and creates the desire to eat as opposed to the need to eat.
I think it can never be underestimated how much stress touches our brain and our body. And that's like my number one like mission is to like lower my stress. And I try to teach my children how to like have as little, you know, to really be aware of stress and manage it and lower it, because cortisol in adrenaline, it's so damaging in our body. And we've got to remember that we've got this caveman brain that hasn't evolved with us, you know.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
By doing this, you know, the things that we can to go, no, you're not stuck out in the wilderness right now.
Yeah, exactly. No, like, this is not real danger, you know. Yeah. Turn off now, please. This is not real danger.
And cortisol is responsible for a lot of bad decision making.
Yeah. You could say that.
A lot of bad habits. I know, it's crazy. And we start to manage our stress, and then you would see that too. That's that holistic, you know, okay, you start to lower your stress and do things that manage your stress better, then that's going to have a ripple effect too on how you feel when you eat, if you're hungry, your food habits. So yeah, cortisol.
And I have a challenge for people listening. If you're not sure just how much of an influence cortisol has, the next time you have a busy day and you think, you know, you've skipped lunch because you're not hungry, I dare you to stop at about between 12 and 1, a normal lunchtime hour, close your eyes and take 5 deep breaths, like go to the bathroom if you need to, put all distractions away, take 5 deep breaths and tell me you're not really hungry. Yeah. Because that cortisol will mask all of those hunger signals. It will stop those signals from going to the brain to tell you, hey, I need some nutrients now, by the way, because we've gone a couple of hours and I'm kind of out of sources here. You know, and it will just mask those signals until the end of the day when we sit in the car and we go, whoa, I am starving. Where did that come from? So it's because the cortisol was saying, okay, hold on a second, I've got an army of cortisol here. Everybody else shut up. I've got the most important job to do. I've got to power the brain and power the arms and power the legs and make sure I give this person all their thoughts and focus on that and their stress response, which is, you know, a heightened concentration and focus and, you know, that kind of, that almost
high alertness.
High alert. And then when the army is put to rest and the army can stand down, then when they say, all right, we're finished, your turn, guys, and everybody else who has something to say, which is usually your you know, hunger hormones going, hey, by the way, I know you're really busy today, but you need some nutrients like ASAP. So that's what gives you that really strong desire. Well, it's a need to eat because, you know, you haven't eaten. So yeah. So I just thought that was, you know, a little good little challenge for people.
That's great advice.
In an office. Yeah.
And because then the problem is too, sometimes if you're stressed or you had a really shitty day at work and then you jump on social media, say just to distract yourself from the day that you've had, and then you get the dopamine dump in your brain.
That's it.
You're like, I'm never going to eat dinner.
True. And you're like addicted, yeah.
Oh my goodness, I could talk to you all day. I find every word that comes out of your mouth so fascinating.
Oh, thank you.
I wanted to finish with just asking you, how do you like to start and end your day? Like, have you got any like rituals that are really important to you at either end?
I do, absolutely. I love waking up before my partner and my daughter. It's my time to myself. Oh, how good is it? And you know what? I love waking up in the dark. Like sometimes there'll be times where I go to bed at like 8:30 and I'll wake up at 4:30 just so that I can have that time. But I love to do a meditation in bed if I can, or otherwise I I waddle out in my pajamas and I roll out my yoga mat, and I either like to sit and use a trigger ball. If I'm really sore, I'll use a trigger ball and I'll just kind of deep breathe while I'm sort of rolling out like any sore parts of my body. I like to release that tension. Or I'll do just lie down and just do a meditation. And then I love to have a dandelion tea, which some people are like, ew, that tastes so gross. But I love dandelion tea, especially for the reason that it's so helpful for bile production. And I eat sort of a higher fat diet, not keto, but I eat higher fats. I love good fats. I love nuts and seeds and avocados. And then I'll have my beloved, oh, it's my favorite thing. It's like a coffee to other people, but it's my matcha green tea latte. I love it. It gives me the good vibes. And then hopefully around that time, and it usually is the case that then Billy, my daughter, will wake up and everybody's up. And I just love to have that time to myself. It's my time to center myself, to make sure I'm not reacted to things, that I remind myself I am part of the universe. I am not the universe. And my reactions are going to have a large ripple effect on not only my family, but, you know, the community,
Absolutely. You've got to create your energy before you then interact with other people, I think. Like that's,
yes,
I'm exactly the same. I like to have that time where it's just about
sacred. Sacred.
Yeah, totally. Yes. And it's not selfish. It's so important because, like you said, then you actually impact your family and, you know, your clients and the community as a much happier person.
Yeah,
I'm a much happier person when I do that.
Totally. And then at night, I always put lavender oil on my wrist, on my pillow, and sometimes on the soles of my feet. If I put it on the soles of my feet, I've had a pretty rough day and I need to wind down.
You need to dose that lavender all over you.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'll either have, I used to religiously have magnesium, but I'll still have magnesium every few nights because, you know, I find it's just really helpful for me, and I exercise a lot, and people who exercise as well as being stressed need a lot of magnesium. But lately I'll either have that, the magnesium, or I'll have a chamomile tea, or my newest thing, which this was a really interesting thing because then I got a test back that showed me I had sort of a bit like lower of this chemical, was 5-HTP, which is a precursor to serotonin, which then makes melatonin. Mm-hmm. So I actually have that it's just like a pure amino acid, or acid. And it's a precursor to it. And I just have like a scoop. Sometimes I double up. And I find that it improves my mood the next morning, but it also improves my sleep overnight. So it was interesting to actually try that first, realize that actually worked for my body. And then when my test results came back, go, oh, wait a second. Actually, this is really indicated for me, this particular supplement. So that was kind of cool as well. So I sort of had the anecdotal evidence first, yes, that it worked for me. So anything to improve my sleep, I will do. Oh. And I forgot to mention I always wear my lame-o red glasses, my blue blocking glasses.
I love them
so much. My partner, the first time I wore them, I think he was like, okay, Elton, what are you doing? But you know, I think if you watch anybody who's like a biohacker, like, it's such a stereotypical thing to do, but I noticed a huge difference. And if it works for me, I don't care what everybody else is doing.
I switched out all the lights. I've got the glasses. And
oh my God, we live in candles. Yeah. I'm like, sun's down. There ain't no lights on in this house. I tell my daughter, I'm like, if she turns on a light, I'm like, Billy, go turn off that light, please. You know, there's no lights on when it's nighttime.
It's wrecking your melatonin.
Exactly.
Oh, I love it. Now, if people want to find you on social media, your website, how can they connect with you? Because you are such a light, they're going to need to.
Thank you. So my Instagram is Cell to Soul. So that's CellToSoul. And my website is celltosoul.com.au.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I really, really loved chatting to you.
I love this chat too.
I could pick your brain all day long.
Thanks so much for listening. And if you loved this episode, I would be so grateful if you could take the time to leave me a 5-star review and share this with your friends and family. I really appreciate you being here with me. And if you'd like to know more about what I do and for some free resources, please head on over to my website, teamko.com.au, and you can connect with me over on social media at Meditate with Kirstie.